Senator Wigger, you're first up. Senate file 1427.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Senate file 1427 is an initiative from the city of North St. Paul, about 10 miles northeast of here as the crow flies, and it would extend two tax increment districts from 5 to 10 years. The problem is the recession, and they need some extra time in the redevelopment and to address further the need for the legislation to extend the two TIF districts to 10 years. I have the city manager, Wally Weissappel.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. And to just reiterate what the senator had to say.
We need your name and who you represent
for
the record,
thank you.
Please.
Wally Weissappel, city manager, city of North St. Paul. And be happy to answer any questions about the request. We have two districts. Our downtown is over 100 years old, and we're in the midst of redeveloping. And this district, these two requests for these districts would allow us some additional time to find the developments necessary to get the tax increment districts working.
And what were the years the first increment was collected?
One district has no increment has been collected. The second district began collection a year and a half ago, and that was a first phase of multiple developments within that district.
This doesn't extend the duration of the districts. It's right. Just the 5-year long.
Okay.
Senator Wigger, we've had a number of requests like this due to the economy. So we understand what you're trying to do. We may do kind of a more general rule with some kind of a sunset because we're seeing so many of these. But we understand the situation, and I expect we're going to look favorably. I don't know if the language will look exactly like this, but we're going to do something on this issue. So.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and also for your awareness of the North St. Paul area.
Village Pizza, still there? This bad economy, are they still operating?
Still there, yes.
Senator Wigger, it would be nice if the conferees could have some Village Pizza this year during our long conference our long conference committee nights here alone in room 15. I don't know if any of the House members have ever had Village Pizza, but Tax Chair has, and it's very good pizza.
Good.
Senator Scheid, have you ever had Village Pizza?
No, Mr. Chairman, where is it exactly? Well, it's in North St. Paul, obviously.
Senator Wigger? I'd call it the main drag of North St. Paul. I don't know what Senator Wigger calls it.
Senator Scheid, downtown North St. Paul, you know where the world's largest snowman is, of course, at Highway 36 and
yes,
Margaret. And then you go Margaret to downtown on 7th and take a left, go east, maybe about 10 doors down, right next to the barbershop.
Okay.
Right on 7th, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for that plug.
Senator Sessions, Village Pizza?
Mr. Chair, I've never had it, but I may have to vote for the tax bill just to be on that conference committee, so I'd
love to have your
vote. I can enjoy it.
There you go.
You vote for the tax bill, I'll buy the Village
Pizza.
All right. Senator Wigger, thank you.
Thank you.
Chair leaves over Senate File 1427 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. What else do we have here? Senator Dahl. Senate File 1550. Senator Dahl, have we had you in the Tax Committee before?
You know, Mr. Chair, this might be the first. Well, I know it's the first time this year. I don't know if I've been in this committee yet.
Burnsville TIF, maybe.
Did we have the... Did you carry the Burnsville TIF?
Yes, we
provision?
Did. That, yep, we were here.
How'd we do for you on that?
Very well, thank you. Thank you very much, and thanks.
I remember we worked very hard. We had a hard time getting the House to kind of get around to the Senate's point of view on that, I remember.
Did a nice job. Maybe I have to go up and buy some Village Pizza for you.
Senator Dahl, what are the old long-established pizza joints in Bloomington? Do we have any? Or is Bloomington too new a city to?
Yeah, there's nothing that I can call out. I think there's a Fireside Pizza down there, but
anything
that's in Bloomington.
Anything in Burnsville?
Yeah, they got Jay's Pizza in Burnsville, and then your traditionals like Devani's and those kind of things around there. You know, nothing more, you know, homey. I guess Jay's Pizza is a family-run place. It's close to me, but
We like little mom-and-pop family-owned businesses. The tax committee does.
Yes.
Good stuff. Good place.
Well, Senator Dahl, what are we working on today?
We got you a novel idea here that we want you to think about. And it's brought up from one of my municipalities. And I've got folks from Burnsville here to talk about it. What this does is it talks about kind of the fiscal disparities plan and the Market Valley Homestead Credit Program and some of the effects that it has on our local levels of government, and provides a kind of innovative way to protect some of that money, so against unallotments. So the language in the bill is a really pretty stiff. It's hard to digest. So I think put it in simpler terms. I have Craig Ebling and Tammy Omdahl here to give us their idea on this program and see if it's something that we can include in the omnibus bill.
Protected from cuts by the legislature, which you can't really do. But
okay, continue.
Mr. Chair,
who'd like to go first?
Craig Ebling can go first.
Mr. Chair and Senators, my name is Craig Ebling. I'm a city manager in Burnsville. I have with me today Tammy Omdahl, who's our deputy city manager and chief finance officer. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you for a couple minutes about a bill that, as Senator Dahl noted, is kind of complicated when you read it. So being an uncomplicated person, I'm going to try to tell you what I think the bill proposes to do. The bill would intend to offer some shelter to a fairly unique subset of cities within the state of Minnesota. Those cities would be cities that have lost a significant amount of local government aid and have not been reimbursed for market value homestead credit, and who simultaneously, as kind of the third leg of the stool, also are big losers through the fiscal disparities plan. This is a significant burden, even for a city that is not a small city. We're a population 60,000, but this confluence of three factors is quite burdensome to us. And I hope that you've received a chart that Ms. Omdahl prepared for us, which is a bar chart. I would note that this says on the bottom green, the estimated impact of House File 1676. I think that that's an identical bill to Senate File 1550. But this bar chart shows a cumulative effect of two of the programs that I mentioned to you, fiscal disparities, of which Burnsville and many other cities in the metro area have been a perennial loser. I hate to call Burnsville a loser, but when it comes
to fiscal, a contributor.
We're a net contributor. That's a much better way of thinking of it, probably. That is combined then with the market value homestead credit reimbursement, which we have lacked for many years. And when you take a look at the years 2004 through 2008, you'll see that the number is approximately $15 million. And what that means to Burnsville taxpayers is that $15 million has been taken out of our borders and used for other, I'm sure, good purposes, but nevertheless has created a $15 million burden for us over those years. What does that mean for a community like us? Our total levy this year is somewhere around $26 million. So this is much more than half of a levy for an entire year. Or what would $2 million mean to us? It's a huge thing each year that we have to contend with. The bill, through a formula which is not very intuitively obvious, at least to me, would provide about $600,000 worth of relief to the city, somewhere between $600,000 and $700,000 of relief to the city. And what that means to us is some of the police and fire cuts that we're presently getting ready to implement, and by the way, cuts to Public Works and several of the other departments within the cities might be negated. We usually think of a cop in Burnsville as being around $75,000. So if these were all policemen, and by the way, the cuts to our police department are about 3.5 FTEs, but if they were all policemen, it would be 8 or 9 cops. So it does come down to where the rubber meets the road in our little town, and we fully understand the challenges that you have on your plate this year. We simply would suggest in this bill that there is a smaller subset of cities that are being pretty much whipsawed by the influence of these three programs in confluence, and some relief might be in order. The total impact, fiscal impact, according to House research, for this bill would be approximately $10 million for all of the cities that would be impacted. And I think that there's another chart on the table that's been distributed to you that gives a city-by-city summation of that. And with that, I would respectfully ask if there are questions that perhaps we could respond to. Ms. Omdahl is much more up to speed on this than I am in terms of the implications of the calculations.
Ms. Omdahl?
Mr. Chair, I do not have anything additional to add, but I would stand for questions, should there be any.
So, Mr. Ebling, this would have reduced the governor's cuts to the market value credit if this bill had been law by about $10 million. Is that?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that is correct.
And Mr. Chair, this applies not only to the fiscal disparities, the Metro plan, but also the Iron Range tax base pool.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dollar, maybe to the witness, how come the revenue impact is zero to the state, the fund impact, if there's?
Well, I think, Senator Scoy, the $10 million we're talking about is if the governor's budget were to become law and this bill was law. Oh, we're really talking about. Right, because this bill would only
It prevents cuts.
It prevents cuts in the event that the legislature cuts market value credit. It would prevent some of the cuts in the cities that are contributors under fiscal disparities. But the bill would only take effect if we actually cut market value credit. So the $10 million assumption would be, assuming the governor's cuts became law and this bill was law, the governor's cuts would be mitigated by about $10 million.
Change to the governor's budget proposal.
Correct, if this bill was law. Senator Rest?
Mr. Chairman, I don't like messing around with fiscal disparities. We've done it a couple of times, but it's we did it for livable communities, but we start making these kinds of decisions, we're going to have every city in the metropolitan area that doesn't like contributing 40% of the growth of their CI value into the pool, coming in asking for help. And that means that there ends up being an impact on other cities in terms of what happens to their distribution values and stuff like that, I would think. I'm just reading the summary. I haven't read the bill, but I think we need it really, unless I'm understanding it wrong, and I only heard the end of Senator Dahl's explanation. I think we just need, maybe this is an okay thing to do, but I think we need to be really cautious in precedent setting. That's all.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, first of all, this doesn't affect, is not changing the fiscal disparities program. It's only using that as a measure in the formulation of what amount would be protected. It's more to do with the market value homestead credit and what could get unallotted through that program and how much could be unallotted. That's Ms. Omdahl speak about it more, but it's more about just using fiscal
disparities. Using fiscal, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dahl, I came in late. Using fiscal disparities as a standard by which the contribution as a standard to set up a formula for how much would be protected from unallotment of the market value homestead credit?
Maybe I could have.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were changing the. I thought it was just the opposite, that you were using the unallotment of the market value credit to manipulate how much Burnsville was going to be contributing in fiscal disparities, and that's what I would have a huge problem with. But it's
Tom Dolly, want to get in this yet?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, real quick, the cities that would be benefit or be protected by this are the cities that are contributing more into fiscal disparities
as far as their tax base.
It would, as Senator Dahl mentioned, it would have no impact disparities program.
Any other questions, members?
Chair. You know, all these things have winners and losers. Who are the winners and who are the losers with respect to cities, or is it everything neutral?
No.
Well, I think that under this proposal, in the event that the market value credit was cut in the state budget this year, and that may well happen, the governor has proposed that the cities that would be somewhat protected against the full impact of the proposed cuts would be the cities that are currently today net contributors to the fiscal disparities program.
But still on that, you know, so the unallotment would then be spread to the net receivers. And guess who they are? They are the
recipients of the fiscal disparities end.
Well, everybody gets a distribution, but you measure the contribution against the distribution for whether you're a net contributor or a net receiver. But the reasons why you're a net receiver are because you can't make those kinds of contributions because you're not a high, wealthy, tax-based city. I mean, the whole, you know, the name of the account is the Metropolitan Equalization Revenue Equalization Program, what this would result in, I guess, is the cities that are net receivers would be taking an even further hit in the unallotment of the market value homestead credit, and it would be up to the tax committee. And I don't know what my opinion is yet, but whether that is a good trade-off or not.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, but it wouldn't be a dollar for dollar loss because there are other players in the market value credit that are not in fiscal disparities who would be absorbing.
I thought they said, Senator Skoy, that the only cities that would be affected would be the net contributors.
Well, but if we change the market value credit distribution, all the cities that would be receiving a reduction would be affected by that. But the mechanism for determining it is just from fiscal disparities. So for your net recipients of fiscal disparities, it's not going to be a dollar for dollar distribution change because there's other players in the formula on the market value credit side.
So it would affect cities all across the state.
Well, that's the way I'm reading.
Right.
Okay. Yes.
Right.
Which, I mean, what is that? $10 million? You said it's $10 million. Well, then,
shift, yeah.
Yeah, it's not just a metro issue. So it is a. We need to decide whether we like that's a good policy for dealing with the market value homestead credit on allotments or cuts as opposed to the Senator Box 530 and then the bill that I had that would allow a special levy for that to take care of that bleeding. This is another approach, obviously, and I don't know which one is the best.
Senator Dahl, anything further?
Well, Mr. Chair, as I'm listening to the conversation, that's kind of what we're doing is providing some protection in those areas in the tax pool sharing plans, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's a dollar for dollar that there'll be a shifting to the net, you know, receivers in the program. We'll spread it out, and it does leave a $10, you know, in this case, maybe a $10 million issue that would have to be resolved somewhere else within the budget. Could be within this program or somewhere else, but I think it's another idea to.
Or all cities that get market that yeah. got a cut on market value credit, they would get ratably a proportionately $10 million cut. the net contributors in fiscal disparities would be carved out from. That, and we just have to look at the, and that may be fair, and some of them would be my city, so I'm interested in that. But there may be other fairer ways of doing it as well. But this is an idea.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's just another idea, as was said, to put on the table. We think it's worthy of consideration. We hope that you'll look into it as you go forward.
Senator Dahl, it doesn't seem like quite as good an idea as that Burnsville TIF was. But we got to spend a little time thinking about this one.
Appreciate that.
But it's a creative thought, for sure. Chair leaves over Senate Bill 1550 for possible inclusion in the committee's bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Rest?
Yeah. Chairman, I have Senate File 331, and I have one amendment, author's amendment.
Senator Rest moves the A1 to get the bill in the shape that the author would like it in. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A1 is adopted. Senator Rest, on your delete everything amendment.
Mr. Chairman, the amendment to Senate File 331 proposes a way of establishing a procedure for filing refunds for or claims for refunds of payments that I'm looking at. If you want to follow along, it sounds a little bit complicated here. For refunds of payments made under the law that imposes a personal liability on responsible officers and directors for unpaid taxes of a business entity. The current law gets in the way of allowing that to happen, and what the bill and the amendment allows is a way for if an officer makes the payment that is that indicate and files for the refund, that indicates within 120 days, that indicates that the officer is contesting the judgment and by that very action. And heretofore, in current law, that would not be allowed. So the bill then allows individuals to file claims for refunds, which then enables them to appeal or either file a lawsuit if they do so within 120 days of making the payment. And again, under current law, that would not be possible. So it's a glitch in the law that that I think this bill will remedy, and Perhaps we can hear from the witness of how it would work if we pass this.
So, Senator, if under current law, if you file for the refund, there's no way then to file an appeal?
Well, you have 60 days to appeal, but if you fail to appeal within that 60-day period, and I'm looking at the summary again, you lose your right to contest the liability. And the bill would allow you to file a claim for the refund, which by doing so enables you to appeal administratively or filing a lawsuit if you do so within 120 days. And these are directors who are being, you know, assessed personal liability for unpaid taxes of whatever entity it is that they're on the board for.
Good morning. Thank you, Senator Bach, members of the committee, and Senator Rest. My name is Gina DeConcini. I'm the vice chair of the tax section of the Minnesota State Bar Association. I also am the head of a committee formed by that section to address this issue. We compromised the language of this bill and worked together with the Department of Revenue, and we are in agreement with the Department of Revenue on this language and our agreement that that this needed to be amended. The bill in front of you will not actually help any actual responsible officers who are assessed personal liability for failed businesses that did not pay their taxes. It is intended only to allow those who believe they can prove that they are not responsible officers and that were assessed, sent a notice in error, that they were not responsible officers. It's effectively the only appeal position that they would be allowed to make under this bill. Currently, they are all of the officers that the Department of Revenue knows about or believes may be responsible officers are simultaneously given notices for the full amount of liability. There are several reasons why these individuals who receive it who are not responsible officers may not respond within those 60 days. Some of them don't ever receive the notice. They're not sent by certified mail. Some are told by other officers that receive the same notice, don't worry, we'll take care of it. And some of them are just in a turmoil process because their business is going under, which is the reason, for whatever reason, they missed the 60 days. Once they miss the 60 days, they literally right now under the law have no remedy, no ability to step forward and make that one argument, which is you got the wrong guy. And basically what we've done is create the normal statute of limitations period of 3.5 years to say if you appealed within your 60 days, you don't even have to make a payment. There is no refund mechanism. You're not making a payment. You did it properly. But we're adding a layer of due process only to say if you missed your 60 days, you can make a payment, sue for a refund. When it's denied, you now get an appeal ability to deny the refund of the payment that you made. And that's all that we're doing is adding that 3.5 year period. The compromise elements meant we're not going back, so anybody currently paying who still believes they're not a responsible officer, if that assessment came before the effective date of this bill, they will not be helped by this bill. If they miss it within 3.5 years, they still won't be helped by this bill, so it's only giving them the normal statute of limitations. But we believe that it's a lot better than what we have now. So,
Ms. DeConcini, that's a very articulate explanation of the bill. Even the chair understands it.
And the author.
What does the department think?
Mr. Chair, my name is Rick Walzer. I'm an attorney with the Department of Revenue, and I drafted most of the languages in this bill, so the department is in favor of it.
Of the amendment?
Yes, of the amendment. it was a compromise with the Bar Association. Currently, there's no refund right whatsoever, so this will add some due process to make it like any other tax refund procedure.
Thank you.
Concludes my statement.
Questions of the committee? Senator Rest, anything further?
No, sir.
Chair lays over. Senate
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair? Seems like a trite idea, but is it a good idea? I mean, you know this best. I'm talking the Department of Revenue.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I believe it's a good idea because we impose personal liability on anybody who we think might be personally liable. So there are multiple assessments for the same amount. The most that could happen is somebody who's been assessed who failed to timely appeal, we might be collecting from them when they're really not liable. So it is a just result. And the underlying liability does not go away. So there is no revenue loss. We can still pursue other responsible parties.
Thank you.
Senator Ressin, anything further?
Nope.
Chair lays over Senate File 331 as amended for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Ms. Dickensini, thank you. That was very good testimony. The chair has Senate File 1164, and I have somebody here from the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. Many of that have been around here for a while. Remember the old U.S. Steel site on Lake Superior, and this is a TIF project that we hope will lead to some expanded opportunity of that old Duluth U.S. Steel property. So, Mr. McDonough?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. The port, in addition to its mission to promote maritime commerce, is also charged with doing economic development in the port district. And over the years, we have received inquiries from industrial-type companies looking for large sites in our region, and there just aren't any large enough to accommodate these sites. Part of the – and in the more recent years, it's accelerated because of our increased handling of wind energy cargo through the port. And one of the sites that we identified was the former Duluth Work site, the former steel plant site. It's a 550-acre site that is currently a Superfund site. And we have been negotiating with the company over the past 2 years to acquire this, and we would be doing it in a phased manner where we would acquire. We're currently looking at acquiring 123 acres from them that they believe to be the most readily developable site because one of our conditions of acquiring it is that that particular property would be delisted from the Superfund list in order for us to go forward. This site happens to be in the southwest corner of the property, which would require us to extend a new road to that site. So we would like to establish a redevelopment district. And because it will come in phases and we are not exactly sure of the exact location of the roads and the utilities on the interior of the site, we are looking to or requesting that the rule that would require us to spend and commit for all of the funds in the TIF plan within the first 5 years, we would like to get that requirement waived.
Questions, members? Senator Pugmore.
I'm sorry, is this just for this one project?
Yes, specifically for this project, Senator.
It's the handout.
We've identified it by parcel number.
Just a brief reminder to hit how many exemptions to the five-year rule. We've done that quite a bit.
Counsel, go ahead. Senator Pogemiller, we've had a lot of bills requesting extensions this year, largely because of the economic circumstances. Senator Wieger was in today looking for an extension of two TIF districts in North St. Paul. We've heard a number of bills on that. So we're probably going to do something likely in a more general, consistent nature, considering the economic circumstances. But it has been done. Council has been done many times in the past.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pogemiller, we have a list from the from the State Auditor's Office, and I believe that through 2008 we had extended the five-year rule probably 25 times. Sometimes, typically it's to 10 years, occasionally it's a little bit less, a little bit more, and in a couple of instances it was projects were exempted from the five-year rule completely.
Questions, members? And I believe, Mr. McDonough, is the county board acted on this?
The county board has. They passed a resolution unanimously supporting the request.
So, members, we'll take an amend. This just totally waives the five-year rule. I expect we'd probably give them the same kind of term limit that we're going to give the others that have come in front of us. Anything further? Chair lays over Senate File 1164 for inclusion in the committee's bill.
Thank you,
Mr. McDonough. What are you doing next week?
I think property taxes meet on Wednesday.
Tuesday, Thursday, members' bills. Members, next week, the full committee is going to meet on Tuesday and Thursday, and we've got a list of members' bills to deal with. On Wednesday, the property tax division is going to meet. Members, anything further? Committee's adjourned.